defend yourself.
Basically, it's good. I'm trying to finalize my plat, my first phase on Ski Hill.
Oh, good.
So it'll be 16 lots.
Nice.
Yeah. And,
nice.
That's, well,
how many phases have you had?
I don't know. It's 10% of the dirt.
Hmm?
It's 10% of the dirt, so I can theoretically have 10 phases, but I have 5 more parcels.
That's okay. Well,
existing, which are easy phases, boundary line to what I want, and then, so, gonna have to see how it plays. I don't know how this phase is gonna go, you know, let alone make plans on the rest. But
are you gonna have help selling the parcels?
I'm gonna list them. I'm gonna sell them myself.
Are you?
Yep.
Good. If you need help, let me know.
Okay.
With John L. Scott's corporate,
I stay away.
I work with them on a corporate level, and I work with developers over there as well, and they've got a huge, we can bring in other corporate people from that area, and they do that, with people coming over here from Seattle. It's
that's what I'll be missing out on, but I think there's so much to do that I can sell them myself, and then I'll pay it.
Just moving one chair at a time.
But then I'll pay a buyer's agent commission because I don't want to cut the industry out.
I'm
just going to see how it goes.
Yeah.
Lots will probably come on in December.
Got your dinner there?
It's not exactly the best time of year. If it's crickets all winter, I might be thinking a lot different thing in the spring.
Yeah, no, that's exciting.
Yeah. So it's busy, fun.
Yeah.
Right now. You know, things are fun when they're going well, right?
Yeah.
So it's 6. I know Vicky's planning to come. Should we give her another minute or two?
Probably.
What did you do?
Chair.
Huh? What did you do? I'm your protege. I'm your protege.
I waited for a few minutes. Yeah, if you know somebody's coming, I just waited. Yeah, I was working in Las Vegas all last week.
Doing what?
Doing a trade show down there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Can't believe it. I haven't stayed in Vegas for a long time. God, it's really expensive down there now. It's ridiculous.
It's also just a crazy town.
Huh?
It's a crazy town, too.
Yeah. I didn't gamble at all. No gambling. Just worked. Yeah. Sure.
Interesting changes, huh? Yeah, I know.
I know Vicky's planning to be here. Should we wait another?
What?
She's planning to be here.
You got that right. They couldn't come
up with it. Okay. She'd pivot kind of left way. You heard some of everything, Vicky. Did somebody spill something? Or no? Is she just a very clean person?
Not necessarily do their homework because doctors.
People around you benefit from that.
You should.
Perfect time.
17 pages and you've got 3 or 4 pages. 3 pages?
Yeah.
I'm sure. Before we even started this
time. Yeah. Must be doing that before we get here for our 7 o'clock meeting.
Yeah.
Erase down his name. Put Shannon in there. that Old Town of Paradise just was devastated by a fire.
Really?
That utility was.
Was it local?
But that they never forced it anyway.
Can you imagine that noise covers everything?
What did they screw up?
I checked it out.
More questions.
My God, I read the minutes.
Oh, it was the appraisal that was terrible.
Which is.
They just didn't do a lot of extra work.
The contract or whatever they were talking about.
Got snow a few times. In the shaded areas.
And if we were planning to charge $16,000 for lot and square feet as part of the lot closing on San Francisco. They wrote that in their narrative. They didn't include that evaluation.
We got to reinvent the wheel.
And they put the entire cost of the community center into costs. And gave us no credit for it. Even though they wrote down that it was part of. And they put all this stuff in about not having complete answers to stuff that I never had asked for the commercial page afterward. And I didn't put in there. So they called and asked for it. And I said, well, here's my explanation. But if you need hard numbers, if you need estimates or bids, if you need some additional mapping for the survey, let me know. Oh, no, we have everything we need. And then they wrote in the narrative that it would be very difficult to reappraise because they didn't have all the required information clear and had to rely on the information I gave them.
I don't understand.
I think the last one.
The one about the model.
Who did it? Oh, okay. The last one I got, what did the bank? So then the bank has to have someone review the, you know, a third party review the appraisal. They said it was barely adequate, I think were the words. But adequate, you know, so it didn't have to be redone.
It says right here that question was recommended for.
And I don't have any recourse.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go ahead and call the meeting to order at 6:06. I think Commissioner Malloy is on the way, but we probably won't get to anything very interesting before she gets here. So, with that, we'll go ahead and take a look at the minutes from September 25th. Is there any discussion on the minutes?
I have a question. On item number 2, it says that Emily presented a comprehensive plan, answered our questions, and recommended approval. If I recall right, there was no recommendation made. It was stated that all we were doing was, it was presented to us for clarification and consideration, but I don't remember any kind of recommendation was given by staff one way or the other. Did I mishear?
I think I recall it being an introduction as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there was not then by staff a recommendation for approval. Okay, so could we have that corrected?
Strike. Third year
I can.
Okay. If anyone can't, just let me know.
Okay. Any other discussion on the minutes? Is there a motion to approve the minutes as amended?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? And the minutes are approved. Moving on to old business, continued hearing ZTA 19004, short-term rental code and definitions. This is a hearing that's been continued for several months now. The draft code is substantially different. The draft code that's been presented to us today, after having been remanded back to staff, is substantially different. And it's been staff's recommendation that we close the hearing on the previous draft code and instead have a workshop on the new draft code. That would, of course, mean we need to go through the whole process again. We need to have another workshop. We need to have another public hearing. But the content of this new draft code is not what the public had opportunity to review and comment on. And I think it's changed in substantial scope. And because of that, it makes sense that it would have its own public process.
Can I ask a question? I believe that the direction that we left at the last meeting was to research and review some alternative processes and ideas for coming to a conclusion. And I, rather than reviewing, rejecting, or moving forward with a new draft, I'd like to hear what those ideas that they researched were and go from there before we make a decision on closing this one, moving on. Because I mean, I think we made it pretty clear that we didn't just want to receive a new draft back with ideas, that we wanted to have some different ideas to move forward. We made it pretty clear that we didn't just want to have a changed document brought back. And I'm assuming that they did some of that, and it would be nice if we could hear from them what their thoughts or ideas were.
Does that sound like a discussion that should happen in the context of the hearing for the previous draft or in a workshop on short-term rentals in general?
I mean, we didn't reject, although there was some consensus that maybe we would, we didn't reject the document completely. We said that we had concerns about it and we wanted to know what some ideas were of how we can move forward with making it better, whether that be changing the current code, whether it be redoing it completely, whether it be doing it. We talked about a workshop, we talked about a lot of different ideas, and I just wondered if the staff had any of that to report back to us.
That was a quick response from staff.
That was my understanding too, is that it was remanded back for some ideas going forward. So part of my approach to that was looking at potentially what a new draft could look like. And that's what I presented in the packet. Mm-hmm. And then I also gave in the packet for comparison kind of the process that City of Chelan did that several people were interested in. I think staff's conclusion is that, and the impression I got was that the Planning Commission was done kind of discussing the first version of the draft. So I think for a cleaner process, it would be good to end that hearing with your guys' recommendation. And then we can tonight do part of a workshop to kind of talk about what I've drafted compared. I'm not going to totally speak for the director, but I'm under the impression there's probably not a budget for hiring a consultant, so that would not be part of the options. But, you know, redoing the process and having a workshop or two would probably be the best option going forward. So, and then that would start a new public process with, like Brian mentioned, another 60-day review with Department of Commerce, public notice, public comment period, where the public can also participate and comment on any future draft. So that's kind of what I came up with.
I think the only reason to leave the hearing open is if we somehow think we're going to recommend something substantially similar to the first draft, and I don't think we are. Mm-mm. And so it would be a matter of denying that draft, closing the hearing, and starting over with lessons learned. Some more discussion on that?
Well, I think if we're going to do it, let's do it right. Mm-hmm. And let's not put together some patch meal type of document that is obvious, well, no matter what we do, no one's going to be happy, but that I think is a little bit more complete, considerate of the testimony that we received. And I'm a little troubled to hear that the money's not available for outside consultation like hospitality or somebody of that nature.
I think that's different. The host compliance would be part of the implementation of the code. But like City of Chelan hired a firm to do the research, draft the code, and that'll be done in-house by staff.
Host compliance does not, if asked, make recommendations as far as a document that they feel would be, they could present to us that would be workable, complete, after hearing our concerns?
They would have to be hired in a similar manner to draft a code.
And then what you're saying, there's no money in the budget for that?
I don't believe that was budgeted for, so unfortunately our director wasn't able to make it here tonight, so. A little bit out of turn on that, because I don't know those details as much, but the intention is to have staff draft.
I would like to explore that conversation a little bit more. But again, that would be in the context of a workshop. Mm-hmm. So is there any more discussion on, because I think there is a lot to discuss there. But I think to do that right, like you say, we need to start over.
I'll make a recommendation of recommendation for denial for the ZTA 19-004 short-term rental code at this point.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right, any further discussion on that? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? And the recommendation of denial passed and the public hearing has been closed. And we are back to square one, but much more educated.
So I did want to just let you know on the agenda there was the
yes, I'm sorry, I did skip that. Is there anyone here who came to speak to the Planning Commission on something that is not on the agenda tonight? If there's anyone that came specifically for that purpose, we'd give you 3 minutes to speak.
I'm not really certain what's on the agenda, but I think it's
the agenda was the hearing.
The agenda was the short-term rental hearing. So
if it's about that, I can speak?
If it's about that, you cannot. The public comment period on that has been closed. So now we're initiating a new workshop.
Okay. So can I comment on the decision, or the, not decision, but the conversation of who might be drafting the new codes?
I would love for there to be a conversation about it. This is not quite the context yet. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, let the workshop begin.
All right. So I think in your packet, you guys were provided a new draft. This was looking at comments that were received during the last process and feedback received from the Planning Commission. And then I did also include the Planning Commission packet that went out to the visual man on the similar subject. So I guess I was kind of hoping to get some feedback from you guys on, you know, what kind of direction you would like to see this go. And then maybe, you know, for a future workshop, what we find helpful.
Regarding the development of this, is there, instead of having you sit down and try and decipher everything that people are throwing at you, is there a possibility of going to other municipalities that already have code in place and using them? And I don't mean just Banson UGA, I mean you can go Maui, Colorado City, Newark, New Jersey, they all have code and it's all available on the internet. it would seem to make your job a lot easier and might answer a lot of questions as a starting point.
So I can bring in full codes as samples. So that is part of kind of the research that has been done for both versions of the code, is looking at other jurisdictions who have things adopted and kind of using similar type language, but really trying to make it fit for Chelan County. So,
well, it seems to me you're trying to reinvent the wheel that's already been invented. And I mean, I know you put a lot of work into this. But you might be missing things that have already been put in place that are working.
So,
Was the first code based in part on San Juan County's code?
It was a lot of San Juan County's code.
So they have done what you're suggesting a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. And they used Manson's UGA, and yeah. I understand that. But
UGA, yep. Spokane County, City of Spokane, Calhoun County was a big one that we looked into too, because they had one draft and then actually recently been revising it. So kind of looking at what they started with and what kind of revisions after implementing it for a while they've been making. So that's something. You know, I didn't provide that in any of the packets, but maybe for our workshop, you guys would like to see some select cities, old codes, and how they're addressed. Kind of similar to like what's being proposed for City of Chelan, because you kind of, they're creating a new chapter in their code to address it.
Well, does it make any sense at all if we're going to do something like this and you're going to supply us with more than Manson's or whatever, that we receive these documents and in turn we set up and have a board, and if there's aspects that we like about a certain city, commissioners can make a recommendation and then put the elements together on the board, so it is a true type of workshop, not with here are your examples and then we sit there individually and say, well, I like this and I like that and what have you, but if we can put it up on the board where everybody can see it in black and white, maybe that would be a means that would be good for everyone. At least it would be for me in my thought process. So as a suggestion, I mean, then it's a true workshop.
And could we also get host compliance involved? On their website, they offer a free complimentary analysis. Have you explored that option?
I can follow up with Dave on that.
Yeah. It's complimentary, so I'm not sure that we don't have anything to lose.
I'm still just, I know that there's real complaints and real issues with people out there in a lot of areas, in marijuana growing, in, you know, people with debris and junk cars, with short-term rentals, with long-term rentals. I mean, I don't want to belittle those people that are actually having some serious issues with it, and I recognize the change that it can have on a community. At the same time, I think about like long-term rentals. I don't think we have any code at all about long-term rentals, and I'm looking at Chelan's like little draft proposed code, and I just, somewhere it seems like we shouldn't need 40 pages of text to deal with a very specific item that has some things in common with other uses that already exist. But at the same time, I think we would be remiss not to look at where there are actual issues that are documented and real solutions, but not just feel-good solutions, not just words on a piece of paper that don't result in any change. And so I'd like to relook at the entire thing from what exactly are we trying to accomplish? Can we accomplish it? And are the pieces that we're putting together actually in any way going to move us closer to that? Because there's sometimes things that we don't like that we just need to leave alone. And so I think it's figuring out which things need to be addressed and which ones don't, which ones are already addressed and don't need to be duplicated. So that's why my whole concern initially was in getting back to the drawing board and looking at a new path going forward, where we're actually beginning with the end in mind. Like, we have some idea of where we're trying to end up instead of just, hey, we've got a problem, so can we create some kind of code that'll fix it?
I think one thing that informs that conversation is some data.
Yes, and we're working off of a lot of data that's bad data, data that isn't really been reviewed, is sort of hit and miss. Maybe that's all that was available, but the data that we have heard is very subjective.
And yet it's data that comes from the mouths of people who have had this experience. We cannot discount that. And we cannot discount that there are, I don't know how many municipalities in this country that have codes regarding short-term rentals. They're not doing it because they want to write code. There's a reason for it. And I don't think we're so special that we don't have the same problems. So I think it does need to be looked at, and I do think that the only way we're going to get a handle around it is most likely writing code. I do agree with you that we should know what the end result is and what are we trying to achieve. I agree 100% with that.
So I would maybe circle back to the idea of Burke.
Yeah, I got my note as data to support, so I will.
And yeah.
So.
And I would, I actually really appreciate those comments. I agree with them. Unfortunately, the part I'm struggling with is we have public testimony that's strongly conflicting. And I don't know how just from that alone to say you're right and you're wrong. At the end of the day, if we don't have some good, solid data and a goal in mind, all we're going to end up with is picking a side of someone's story. And we'll have absolutely no idea of whether we're doing something good or bad until 5 or 10 years have passed and we see the problems with it.
Well, Aaron, that's why we get paid the big bucks.
I know.
And I'll donate my salary to fund host compliance.
But what about if we had other cities to look at and review, we would know whether or not we are headed down the right path.
Especially somewhere that's had it in place for a little while.
Right.
Looking at a new code would be a lot less helpful than a place that's had a code in place for a while.
Right.
But there's a lot of places that have a lot of codes we don't, and I don't want to live in any of them. So there's that side of it too. There's a lot of additional codes in downtown Seattle. I have no desire to make Chelan County anything like that. But I also do respect the fact that there are people next to bad operators or who have had their neighborhood dramatically changed. I'm compassionate towards that.
Yeah. The need is for a tool to deal with those situations. But the tool at hand is code, which is sort of a blunt object and has wide-ranging consequences.
And code that may already exist.
Yeah, enforcement is,
but to most of the stuff that's addressed here is already in code and is enforced by the Sheriff's Department and city and such. It's real bothersome to me to start a whole new code and essentially say the same thing and add a few things and then another big bureaucracy that goes on top of it and charges people and everything else. Now that's my 2 cents.
We're not as chatty tonight.
I'm in agreement with Jim.
Okay.
So looking through the FERC report, just kind of on their sources, they used a lot of census data and stuff from HUD and pretty accessible sources. So, maybe I can put something together a little bit more reflective of kind of how they approached it, if the approach seemed good.
Right.
And I think some of it's just by nature is difficult. You know, we talked about law enforcement responses. There was different people that brought that up from staff to the public about, you know, I think the sheriff's office even, or the sheriff made some kind of comment about the data that they were able to pull out of Rivercom. It was really subjective. I mean, you're looking for a word. This assumes a lot of things. It assumes that the person calling in knew that they were calling in on vacation rental, right? I you could be in a vacation rental next door to a vacation rental and calling on a problem next door, and you're probably not going to call and say, hey, these vacation rentals next door are having a problem, because you're not going to have any idea. You're not from there. Or if you're on Lake Chelan in a summer home, you might only be there every once in a while. So it's just a lot of the data that we were given and a lot of the testimony we were given was really subjective. And I don't like trying to make code off of something that's really subjective. So.
But let me ask you a question though, Aaron. But if the people live next to a short-term rental and they mm-hmm. know it's a short-term rental, and they have experienced the nuisances that were brought up in numerous cases, I mean, is that really subjective?
Well, what I'm saying is exactly that. We've got the public saying that this is happening, right? And then we got Rivercom and the sheriff's office saying they're not getting any phone calls for it. So something's not...
But wasn't there a technical issue there? That...
No.
Well, they were searching by word.
Well, but wait a minute.
No.
This all makes the assumption that every time there's a problem, they're going to call the sheriff.
Exactly.
This summer, I had 4 problems with vacation rentals. It was not prudent nor wise to call a sheriff. A, because it was going to take too much time for him to get out. And B, the action was taken much quicker by going to the rental manager than by going to the sheriff. And I think a lot of people find that. So just because there's no calls to the sheriff doesn't mean there aren't problems.
And that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying, is that we've got this data coming in that isn't really useful. We've got one side of the public saying one thing, another side of the public saying something else, the sheriff's office in Rivercom saying something different, and none of it adds up. So we make a decision on what? On which side of that issue? The side that says they're not getting complaints, the side that says they have a complaint every day, the sheriff's office that says they don't get a call. All I'm getting at is, if we're going to make decisions, we need accurate information.
But we really don't have to choose sides.
That's exactly right.
I think what we can do is we can put together something that gives full respect to those people that have short-term rentals and respect their right to do so, and also show consideration and compassion to those people who have had such negative experiences. So I don't think we have to choose sides, and I don't assume to be an arbitrator, but if we're going to approach this, I think it's important to say we're going to be fair to both sides to the best of our ability, again, knowing that both are probably going to hate us by the time we get done. but we have given it a good, legitimate try, well-researched, well-thought-out, in our opinion. Obviously, no one's proposing throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but to ignore all the testimony that we heard, I think does a disservice, my opinion.
Anybody else have thoughts?
Yeah, there's other places, and we talked about going out to other areas in the country, very similar to Lake Chelan, Leavenworth. This is where most of the rentals are at right now. Can we all agree on that? Okay. There's places like Lake Tahoe, there's Solvang, California. These all have rental places, and I've looked at them a little bit. I haven't got into the codes, but there's many places around the country that are very similar to the lake of Lake Chelan, resort areas like Leavenworth that have different festivals year round. There's a place in Minnesota, I can't remember the name of it, it's up northern Minnesota. So there's places that we can see what their codes, and obviously the problems probably exist there as well. And just to see what kind of codes they've adopted to their counties as well. I think we all have to agree there needs to be some kind of data, and like you talked, Aaron, has to be facts, just not hearsay. And I totally agree with you too, Greg. There's got to be a lot of these that have happened that with short-term rentals, and like I talked from the beginning, you know, I think the industry does a great job for those people that use the property management companies. I think that a lot of those are do the right service in hiring the property management companies. And there's always a few bad apples out there that spoil everything. So there's the people that don't use the property management companies. They buy the property and they put a key code or a contractor's lockbox and they do everything over the internet and say, okay, here, we're renting this. They don't know who's coming and going because they just give them the code to the house and they have somebody that comes in and cleans afterwards. So there has to be some kind of accountability if someone isn't there to oversee who's coming and going on those properties. So just a suggestion. I really think that if staff can do that, you know, all that information obviously is on the internet, and we can see what other like cities are doing with their codes.
And Aspen might be another town you might
consider. Aspen, yeah.
Probably Moab. I haven't looked, but that's another place where they're really struggling with property and transportation and homes and rentals because of tourism.
What was the city? I'm sorry.
Moab. They have a lot of flat ground around them and a lot of space, but they're actually, it's that pressure. I think looking at a group of those and finding out if some are there, if they're working, and then if they're not working, why?
And maybe making phone calls to those county administrators too and find out, have you gone through this and what's working, what's not?
I would also like to see, and I said it in the first workshop, and I've said it a few times, a stakeholder group involved, mm-hmm. where it is not just us, some of us affected directly, but it's not just us weighing in, it's people on both sides of the issue with direct everyday experience that could contribute their experience and ideas and expertise to it. I think we'd end up with something coming to us that was a lot more informed, just because it was created by more informed people.
I noticed too, in what you presented as too, Kirsten, there was no recommended fee schedule.
No, that was not addressed to us.
That what?
That, yeah, I did not address the fee schedule.
Was there a reason for that?
That is something that can be looked at. It was never included in the original version of the fee table. So that would have to be added in as part of the text amendment.
Well, the $500 came from someplace.
It's in our fee schedule right now. So that's an existing code in a different chapter of our
Does it not make sense to, if we're going to be putting together something like this, to have a proposed fee schedule?
Yeah, we can look at amending the fee schedule with this. Yeah.
If you did have a fee schedule, wouldn't you have to wait till you had whatever it was determined that you were doing before coming up with a fee for it?
Possibly, but in turn two, that should be part of our proposal or at least our document. I mean, that's just another piece of the pie, I think, that needs to be considered. You know, what is a workable fee schedule along with workable
rules or proposals or whatever that we're doing. I mean, it's all one thing, it's all together. Yeah.
So I guess to clarify, in Title III of the county code, we have an established fee schedule, and because Manson permitted vacation rentals, there was already a fee for vacation rentals in the code, and it was 2018 that the fee was changed from $100 to $500. So that was through the board. The fee table's different.
What board was that?
The Board of County Commissioners.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. But I assume even though they proposed that particular fee, is that chiseled in stone or is it, it can be under consideration and revision?
Yeah, it would be another, it would be a change to, you have to amend Title III fee I table see. Within it.
Okay.
We can recommend whatever we want. We just can't change anything.
Right, yeah. Right, right.
That's right.
I just wanted to know how deep the stone was chiseled.
Yeah. I still think one of the things to look at, too, is the size of these vacation rentals. I think that's even more important than density. In my mind, from what I've heard, there's no question that there is a size that gets to a level where it frankly just needs to be treated more like a hotel or a commercial business. It is not residential in nature, and I've said this before. You get 20-something people in a house every weekend. That is a very different beast than 90% of the vacation rentals. I also question if you've got a single-bedroom accessory dwelling on your lot that you rent out that has a single bedroom, and you list it for two people, is there really any need for any regulation of any kind at all beyond what's already on the county books? And I personally think, from what I've heard, there's not. And so my question becomes sort of going from those two extremes, is there a place that needs to be regulated? And if so, how big is that space and how much regulation is needed? And I think it's important to recognize that. Other than having a point of contact and some kind of phone number, I don't think small ones need to be on the radar any more than yard sales or a leather shop in your garage. That's my take. And I'm only one voice, but I feel pretty strongly about that.
Well, that kind of goes to... on the short-term draft, number 6 on B says no more than 2 guests per lodging unit at any time. When you say per lodging unit, that means a bedroom?
Yeah, so that was part of the revised draft, was looking at the definitions in the existing code, which there is a definition for a lodging unit, and that term is used consistently in the bed and breakfast, guest in, and then hotels. So to make it consistent when we're looking across the board, because kind of look at the size part of it, is we do have uses where you sort of get the guest in and hotel, and it's defined on lodging units. So the definition for short-term rental was updated to say 5 lodging units. That was taken out of the district use chart, and then basically at 6 you become something different, and then that's addressed in our code.
Now, when you say 12 guests, is that including children too?
Yeah, I took all the age stuff off of there, so.
Because I'm just thinking of some of the units that are out there. There's houses out there that have 6, 7, 8 bedrooms, mm-hmm. and then they also have like a accessory dwelling on their property that holds guests too, and plenty of parking that can handle all the guests. So, you know, just saying 12 guests, and that includes kids, I mean, families are coming into some of these places and they're bringing all the kids with them, and it's going to exceed more than 12 guests. So to me, I have a bit of a problem with that too. If you put a cap on how many people, when you have a huge property like that.
Size of the property.
Yeah. So the 5 bedrooms kind of dictated the number of people if you've got 2 people occupying a bedroom. wouldn't really, that's two extra people in the house above and beyond what you'd have in a bedroom. So, and then again, if you're getting into six bedrooms, you become something different.
What do you become?
A hotel.
Well, but I know one lady said she had a home of 9,000 square feet that she rented out. She didn't say how many guests stayed there, but she had 9,000 square feet. But if I remember, there was one gentleman here, he bought a lodge.
Mm-hmm.
And they stay in the accessory building. Well, I mean, is that, I can say, is a lodge, and you're calling it a short-term rental? I mean, that's a stretch of the definition. But, I mean, can we not have tiers or something along that idea of the amount of rooms without, I mean, like I said, I don't know what you would rename it. If it's still somebody's residence and they have six or seven bedrooms, then my question again is, well, then what does it become if it's not covered by a short-term rental?
A guest in.
A guest in.
Yeah, that's in our code right now. That's something that's already existing.
So then is that a whole separate?
That's a whole separate code
permitting process and what have you.
And everything. So that was kind of to look at what do we have existing in our code already? Where do these things fit? So
then if somebody comes in with an application and they've got six bedrooms or more, then they would be told, I'm sorry, you don't qualify as a short-term rental, you qualify as a guest in?
Yeah, so kind of dependent on what their situation, then you can look at it and say, you do meet this criteria. If you don't, you fit into one of these other categories.
I can think of, and just being the devil's advocate here, but I can think of a home that I looked at over in East Wenatchee, right in the middle of town, just a single family residence. Seven bedrooms, two kids in each bedroom, and two parents.
And it's a primary home.
It's a primary home. They live there.
They have 14
several kids.
Kids
of their own, and they adopt a few kids, and they. But I'm just saying, and they're not the only one. They're not the only one of these
right.
places out there. And again, not saying that vacation rentals are the same as that. But how we address it, does it make sense? Is there a need, you know, if we throw them into a category that requires a completely different set of life safety things, are those things necessary? I just don't want to add a bunch of code and a bunch of steps and a bunch of cost that doesn't benefit anybody on top. I really want to address the neighborhood problems, the making sure that there's a contact, making sure that where there's code on noise, that people know how to deal with it and they understand that it's going to get dealt with. That you know, there's going to be a phone number to call and complain, and if it doesn't, that people know they call the sheriff, and the sheriff will show up and he will issue a citation.
So I did take out all the references to other code sections because it seemed like that wasn't, I guess people thought it was redundant to have code sections citing another part of the code. Because I mean,
I think it should be there. Then it's one-stop shopping for somebody that wants to operate a vacation rental. You can go to one place and see where all the regs are. But that's what I'd want. I don't think it should be repeated in the code. Just
reference.
And in light of that, I do have a question regarding the septics. If you could just quickly tell me at the end, in part 7G, you talked about one sentence about septics, and you said as defined by chapter 14. What is chapter 14?
Chapter 14 is where our definitions are.
Of what, the code?
Of the code, yeah. So,
oh.
So that's actually well, that's
right. I couldn't find 14, so I apologize. So it's the definitions of the Chelan County Code.
Yeah.
Okay.
That could probably be referenced.
Well, I'm sure I can find it.
You also had in there that it's not permitted in rural waterfront and rural recreational. That's probably the biggest areas where those exist.
So that was kind of just to throw out there for consideration with the density and like you could approach it kind of a couple different ways. Those are the zonings where you're going to have the highest density. So homes are going to be on smaller lots closer together. The impacts are going to be greater. If you go to the larger lots, homes are going to be more spread out. The chance for impacts is going to be less. You know, that's not going to hold true in plan developments that are in, you know. So it's one way to look at the density issue. So that's kind of why I put it in there, just to have an idea for you guys to consider. I also threw the 500 radius out there too. So those seem like two ways within a county environment we could possibly look at density.
I don't think the 500 foot thing to me doesn't. I think a lot of it, because some of these you'd rather see it if they have them, you know, like if there's several of them that are clustered together or something, then they're only impacting each other versus trying to disperse them about everyone as well.
I guess one of the comments that was kind of a repeated thing that I kept seeing was the loss of sense of community, the turnover of entire neighborhoods. So like I see kind of your version, and then other people are like, I'm the only one left on the block who lives here.
Even the AC, the ag commercial and the ag forestry?
I pulled them out of those because, again, there's the conflict between active agriculture and then...
No, and I see some wisdom in the concern about the conflicting part. In fact, we have like special setbacks for residential subdivisions from commercial ag. However, at the same time, these are a lot of the places where somebody could have a unit on their property that the only neighbors are the owners of the property. And so I don't know that restricting them from those zones would be a good idea. Certainly acknowledging that there could be a conflict and looking at that would be wise. But, you know, I was thinking of some of the places where there's wineries or orchards that have either bed and breakfast or vacation rentals, sometimes those actually make a lot of sense. The only people they affect are the property owner. So,
well, of course, one thing about it is you've always got spray drift and sprays and what have you. That's such an issue that obviously we certainly don't want to impact a farmer's ability to farm.
So maybe see if there's any other jurisdictions that have looked at how to, you know, mitigate.
And I think less than 50% of ag commercial actually has agriculture on it, but maybe less than that in Chelan County. So as a zoning, there's a lot of places where they're further away from farming operations than a residential development is. And so I'm just saying, I definitely am suggesting a global look, you know, stepping back.
The ag currently has 100-foot setbacks on those adjacent properties already. So if you had to go in for a permit, you couldn't build closer than 100 feet from those ag commercials.
Sad thing about it is, if you've got people that object to the use of pesticides, herbicides, and what have you, you could be 3 miles away and they're going to file a complaint because they just don't like the fact that you're polluting the air, polluting the ground. So it becomes us or them. And unfortunately, what happens is, not necessarily that this is relevant, but somebody comes in and buys a piece of property next to an established orchard and all of a sudden starts filing infractions or filing complaints when they knew what they were buying when they moved in, but all of a sudden when they got there, it became a different story. So it's complicated, I know.
It also has to do with the property adjacent to that property.
Yeah.
So if there's a strip of land that's less than 100 feet and then there's an orchard, there's no... I mean, it gets goofy. And the owner may not know that the guy can spray. I don't know. We had that. There was a problem in Manson with that. And it got real weird.
Oh, my God. You'll take a look at the court processes. I mean, if you were to believe the advertisements, we're all going to die tomorrow from Roundup. We are.
Yeah, another, I don't know if this would be helpful or not, another interesting piece of data would be to look at an area that is purportedly really high density in these short-term rentals, like maybe a certain area of Lake Chelan, and look at the property in that area and how many of those are primary homes, how many of them are not, and how many of them are vacation rentals, and how many of them are not, and kind of find, I mean, I just, there's so much information missing. We may have areas that have 15 vacation rentals in a 2,000 foot stretch, but 90% of the homes in that area are not occupied regularly. Or we may find that we have, you know, a vacation rental every other property and people that have lived there for 100 years. I just, some of these things would give some context.
So one, another way to look at density, I was looking at this chart of other jurisdictions that the city of Chelan put together. I thought Manzanita was on here. I don't know where I read that, but I believe Manzanita has a percentage of all residential dwellings are allowed to be short-term rentals. And I don't remember what the percentage is. Something like that would potentially make sense to me. The problem I have with restricting it outright in certain zones is, what do you do with existing operators? I mean, people that have invested a lot, been doing it for a long time, been doing it well, and the rug comes out from under their feet, that just doesn't sit well. But also at the same time, recognizing that if short-term rentals continue to be such an attractive investment, over time, you'd see the density problem get worse. So a long-term planning solution is to look at what percentage, what's that?
To make it easier to develop rental property, new homes in raw land.
It's not what I was thinking.
Oh. We haven't started.
An hour ago.
Oh, no! Oh, you guys, I apologize.
I was worried about you. We waited for you for 5 minutes. But...
Sorry. It's okay. Oh, my gosh.
Must be October.
Did somebody tell us that hospitality, I can't remember.
Host
compliance can locate and provide an overlay of existing vacation rentals.
Is that what you're?
Oh yeah, I mean, okay. I think you really need to do some research about host compliance because they're the experts.
So, but with the idea of a percentage of all residential units, you could pick a percentage, figure out what the current percentage is.
Yeah.
And then figure out what percentage we want. And I would hope it's in excess of where we're at now. So we're not affecting existing operators. But so that there's some limit in the future, that, you know, it's a long-term solution. So, you know, whatever it is, you give people, you get existing units on the map through a registration or whatever it is, figure out what the percentage is, and there's some percentage of growth allowed over some period of time, but there will be a point where enough is enough. Because
the percentage will continue to grow as homes grow.
In correlation to the population, the long-term population growth of the area. So as long as we continue to grow, the number of short-term rentals could continue to grow. But it would keep short-term rentals from growing at a much higher rate than the residential population.
But is it possible also, too, that if we set a goal as far as percentage, overall percentage, that those areas that exceed that dramatically currently right now, could we not be in a position as a consideration to put on certain areas, we just put a freeze? You know, and then attrition itself will resolve the problem, and some of those, as time goes on, will start falling to the wayside for whatever particular reason. But we don't allow any more in those areas that are deemed to be oversaturated already. Because I'm thinking too is that, you know, if we go on strictly on a first come, first served basis, you've got people that have already got large investments and have been doing business this way for 10 or 15 years. I mean, I'm not exactly sure how we should handle that, but they certainly have to be, that has to be taken in consideration as well. You know, that possibly they could renew, but when somebody comes in, wants to add a new one, we just don't allow it in certain zones because it's already oversaturated.
I would find it a lot more palatable to not impact existing operators.
Yeah.
But maybe some sort of mapping or numbers associated to what's existing out there and where the locations are will kind of help inform that discussion.
That makes sense.
And I think a higher density would be really advantageous in areas that have a lot of mixed use, where you have residential allowed uses inside of commercial districts, that kind of thing. And it would seem like there might be areas where a higher density would be less of an impact to the neighborhood, because it's a different kind of neighborhood.
I'm trying to picture where that would be in the county, but I agree.
Yes, we have some places with like overshot. A lot of it that I'm picturing in my head is in county, it's in City of Wenatchee, but there's little pockets of that.
I'm picturing City of Leavenworth, same thing.
There's little pockets of that. And I'm just, you know, there's probably some places in Chelan or Manson that might, and again, a lot of these are in a UGA or in a city that has an overlay, but I'm just, in taking that into account, we might be able to accommodate some of that. So the true traditional neighborhoods wouldn't be attractive to turn into a, you know, a complete residential, a short-term rental neighborhood.
Wish I had been here from the beginning.
And I don't know how we do it, but I think we, in all honesty, also have to be somewhat sympathetic to the issue of low-income housing or affordable housing. So, or, you know, the aspect that somebody comes in and builds a new home and immediately flips over to a short-term rental instead of being initially set up as someone's domicile. Like I said, I mean, I think that needs to be part of our formula as well. Because, I mean, we have places where people, I think the one gal that was in Leavenworth was just one example. She works in the hospitality business and can't afford to live there because everything is tied up with vacation rentals, or the prices are so high she couldn't afford to buy and or rent. Mm-hmm. You know, well, I mean, we have to be somewhat sympathetic to that.
So is there any such thing as affordable housing now then?
Well, he's got to have
pretty tough
lots
well,
first.
You know, but I mean, there's the need is there, and I don't think that we can necessarily just turn our back on it. I know it's a very unpopular topic in some areas, which we're experiencing in NEA, but it's still a consideration because we've got a lot of people that are employed in our communities that either can't find a place to live or certainly can't find a place to buy.
That's right.
I think it's absolutely right, and that would be a piece of the data. Our short-term rentals creating part of that problem. But affordable housing is a difficult issue when the topic is affordable housing.
Because what's affordable to you may not be affordable to me.
Well, to create it at all, even if that's your sole focus, let alone in periphery to short-term rentals. Density question does get at that.
You know, what is the cost? You know what, Ryan, you might know the answer to this. What is the cost of regulation and bureaucracy in a single-family home, on average?
Probably somewhere between a quarter and a third of the cost.
Right, and I'm looking at a report right now that looked at five different subdivisions. Four of them had infrastructure costs between $40,000 and $60,000 to bring the project to market. That included land costs, but I get really frustrated. I'm not directing this at anybody on this committee. I get really frustrated when we come into businesses of any kind and we start criticizing their effect or relationship to affordable housing, when every year us and the state sit here and add cost to developing property and putting homes up and then complain about affordable housing. I feel like we just come at it from the wrong direction over and over and over again.
I agree. Can you bring that back to short-term rentals?
Well, where I'm going is we always, the problem gets created, then the problem exists, and then we blame it on someone else and try to make regulations to fix it. And I just, short-term rentals, long-term rentals, waterfront development, shoreline, this is not the place to fix the affordability of housing. The place to fix the affordability of housing is the cost of housing. It's not the outside influence and the artificial inflation of the price, it's the cost, because otherwise there's a lot of land out there. If the cost was down, we could build more units and affect the market and bring the cost down.
As Jordan said, I think density will be the best way to address that. But we have to determine if it's going to be countywide or if it's going to be less than countywide.
There have been jurisdictions that have developed overlay districts.
Right? Yeah, mm-hmm. And we can do that. We already have overlays in this Chelan County with airports. They use overlays.
Yeah.
And we
can use
the
whatever,
exact same process.
Yep. Whatever district you create, it's a percentage right. within that district. I don't know if it's
then
the upper Wenatchee Valley and Chelan.
I think this is where, Jordan, I think this is where it would be good to bring in the stakeholders to, if they were to develop these overlays, they would be the ones that I think would be best able to do that. Because if the vacation rental supporters and the property owners or residents, whatever you want to call them, can agree on the overlays, I think we'd be miles ahead.
And I just want to say on record, I do not want this to become over-restrictive. I'm the one that brought it up, and I did it with great hesitation because it is a lot easier to change the percentage than it is to create the structure in the first place. And I wouldn't want this to be a tool that overly burdens good operators. I want to see it as a long-term planning tool that we put some forethought into it, and we're not scrambling in 5 or 10 years because the problem has been undealt with and it's even worse.
And it has to be, and just to piggyback on that, just talk to the Chamber of Commerce in Chelan, Leavenworth, Wenatchee, about the amount of visitors that have grown over the years. Leavenworth in particular, even Chelan. The more these, we're a bedroom community to the Puget Sound, there's no doubt about it. And the more that grows, the more people are going to come here each year. So if we don't look at this as a future investment from our part and from the whole county's part, the same problems are going to exist going down the road. So we know for a fact that more and more people are coming to our community and visiting each year. That's going to be an impact. I mean, they're building more hotels in the area. Look at Leavenworth, look at Chelan, look at Wenatchee. They're building more homes everywhere right now. So each city wants this growth into the future, which, you know, is rightly so. But how are we going to move the short-term rentals moving forward as far as, you know, we might have to have some growth there, but this, you know, it's a we need some facts, like we said from the beginning, and we just really need to approach it like you said, you know, not maybe 5 years or 10 years, but 20 or 30, 40 years down the road.
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. Trends. And
yeah.
Have we discussed Burke?
Yes.
We have. And what was the consensus?
We're not sure if there's money in the budget.
Okay.
But if you ask nicely. Yeah, we're all asking nicely.
Yeah, nicely, I would just like to say that I would like a professional product to come out of this, not just a piece here and a piece here and a piece here. But that they have actually researched the issue. And there's so many cities like we have on that one handout that have had to deal with the long-term or short-term rental issues. And I'm not putting a finger on short-term rentals, except that we need to deal with the issue in a sense that in the long run, the long term, we're addressing what we foresee happening in the future. And so I'm really in favor of that, and I would encourage that rather than just, and I'm also encouraging that we take on the host compliance, which money may not be in the budget for, but I really would like to see us get a good product together that is workable for everybody and that is going to protect the citizens of Chelan County from the undue issues that have happened, and yet encourage production or, you know, progress, but make sure that we're maintaining the character of our communities, because that's what people come here for, you know, and we have to have people here that care, not just short-term people living there. And I imagine this has already been said, So.
So, and then just to catch Vicki up, the, actually.
We closed the hearing. Yes.
Closed the hearing. So, that was, the motion was to deny the previous code.
Good.
So we'll be starting the process over again. So we'll be doing workshops and that sort of thing. So right now, that's pretty much the, what we're discussing is what we'd like to show up for a workshop with. So it may not, well, I will put the question out about a consultant, but it may just be me doing the research and presenting it to you guys, so.
Okay. The one thing is that they have already put a product together with City of Chelan, and their product was very well thought out. And I'm sure if we were to touch base with Bert and talk to Lisa about it, and I think she can say, yeah, I've already done the research, so this is established, and we can work with you on putting it together for Chelan County, so the cost wouldn't be so great. Okay.
Can I make a suggestion, too? I know it may seem awfully simplistic, but that's sometimes how my mind works. That we have a stated goal, a stated mission statement, so we know exactly what we're trying to accomplish, and therefore, here is the resulting proposed action.
That's easy. Just put down trying to make everyone happy. That's a good goal.
Yeah.
If it's the majority, then.
So I feel like we've had a good discussion. Is there anything that anybody else is hoping to get in, or is there anything that staff would like more direction on?
No, I feel like you guys gave me a lot to do. So I would say that probably just to set expectations, I don't think that this data will get compiled by the November meeting. So
we're looking at,
don't see it in the packet.
I mean, you have other things to do too?
No. Sometimes they want me to work on other things. So
have we asked that there be definitions established in the project? Because we were lacking definitions in the last
draft
that you put out. And I think that's very important, especially when we're talking units versus bedrooms and things like that.
Okay.
So point of clarification after what the young man with the scraggly beard on the end said, is it understood that, for instance, a mom and pop that has one bedroom that they rent out, is that part of short-term rentals? You said code lists that as different.
So.
It's under 30 days.
Yeah, it's under 30 days right now.
That's the way I read it.
It would be defined that way, but that would be something that we can talk about in a workshop is and start. So I guess what I'm surfacely thinking right now is that we'll have some sort of more interactive workshop where we have maybe different codes that we're looking at and some data that is compiled ahead of time so that we can kind of start looking at developing maybe a purpose statement or a intent statement. Mm-hmm. Does that kind of summarize what all the ideas?
Mm-hmm.
So data outlining kind of the issues and what's supporting it, mapping to show locations of what's existing, and then full sample codes that we can kind of pick apart and then start laying out the direction.
Mm-hmm. We're doing this at the direction of the county commissioners, right?
The short-term rental code?
Yeah. Yes. So maybe you should get a statement from them what they think the goals are. What they want.
And so just to follow up on Jim's comment, one of the concepts for a workshop I think would be discuss the idea of tiering. You know, if you have one bedroom being rented with on-site managers, that seems like a different thing than six bedrooms with 25 people, yeah. Right?
It's more like a bed and breakfast.
I could also see it being different with an on-site manager versus a professional manager versus an absentee manager? You know, I mean, yeah, there's some.
I think the on-site's pretty well defined in our code right now through bed and breakfast and guest in, because those both do have on-site managers in them. So maybe that would be helpful to bring in what's in our code.
Yes, a discussion on that would be helpful.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because I recall there was a lady that was very, very concerned about how much it was going to cost her when she had a home and she was renting out a room. And so that shouldn't fall under all of this because she's on site.
I know there's some of these too that the people live in on like regular basis daily all year long, and then they rent it out like certain weekends or times of the year. In fact, I was talking to somebody the other day that they get a hotel room and stay in it for two nights during these key weekends during like Thanksgiving and Christmas, and that's the only time they rent it out. I just, as I'm hearing all these ideas and these rules, I'm thinking of things like that and thinking, do we really want to complicate those people's life? Is there any benefit to the public?
Are people there, are the guests going to behave any differently than guests in a home that's rented 365 nights a year? The impact of the neighbors might be the same.
It's party, well, or it's but, celebration.
But the impact, one of the big complaints is that it happens all the time over and over and over again. Well, if it's not being rented all the time, then it's not happening all the time. I'm just saying, so I just think we need to look at things like that.
So maybe that's there's some threshold of nights rented.
Right. Well, and if you're living there and your things are there and you're, it's, we stayed in one like that in Lake Placid. And frankly, I thought it was kind of weird. Okay, I mean, pictures of all their kids and their silverware and their food in the fridge, and you know, it was a little different. But the nature of that is very different from an absentee owner that buys a house and props it up for rent. I'm just saying we need to think about all of the effects, not just the people that yell the loudest.
I would propose that if the rental is falls under the substitute House Bill 1798, then it should be part of the code.
Something to talk about.
I did have a request from one of the commissioners tonight, but I forgot to send out the House Bill to everybody, so I will send that to everybody.
That's it. That's hard to argue with.
No, that's it.
Somebody might want to, but it, you know, we'll see when the conversation comes up.
Yeah.
So I just want to kind of just, again, set the expectation. It will not be any sort of draft code coming to you the next time around. It'll be research that has been gathered for further discussion in a workshop format. So
in January or
probably
later?
January.
Okay.
And would you include, please, in your research, conversations with a couple of the cities that have had issues, where they've addressed it, found some solutions that are good for everybody, and find out what their purpose was or what they were addressing, so that, because I think in the larger, like New Orleans has just recently had something go through, but in the larger areas, they will have faced some of the deeper issues we're going to face later on.
Okay. Any final thoughts?
Nollins, yeah, he's right.
Nollins. last word.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Oh my.
All in favor, say aye.
No, I'm against
further
it.
Discussion.
I was here
you can stand.
Further discussion.
Aye.
Oh. Any opposed?
Yes.
Okay.
We're not getting to use technology.
You guys know how to handle it.